Independent Fiduciary Service versus UAL, Mr. Agusti.
May it please the Court, Your Honor, my name is Phil Agusti, and I represent the IFS, Independent Fiduciary Services, the fiduciary for the United Airlines pension plans. The question before the Court is fairly straightforward. The issue is whether IFS is an interested party in the 11-13 rejection proceedings that are to begin on Wednesday, May 11th. Essentially, the parties agree on the standard for what is an interested party. An interested party is someone with a financial stake or otherwise with a legal interest in the proceedings. And we think it is amply clear that IFS has such an interest.
I'm interested in appellate jurisdiction before we get to the merits.
Yes, Your Honor.
You want us to treat this as the denial of a motion to intervene as of right.
I do, Your Honor.
But isn't IFS already a party in the bankruptcy?
We're a party in a bankruptcy, Your Honor, but we are not a party to this contested matter. In order for us to participate...
But that's the problem. I don't even think there's such a concept as parties to a contested matter. There are parties to an adversary proceeding, but I think you're correct. This is a contested matter rather than an adversary proceeding.
Yeah.
So it's not a question of intervention. Your client's a party. This seems to me more like a situation in which a district judge says, you know, I've got this litigation. There are lots of subsidiary disputes under it. I'm not going to allow you to take discovery or make an oral argument on some part of it. Now, that may be a mistake, but it's not something that could be appealed immediately. Why is this any different?
Your Honor, 1113D actually calls for any interested party to
I understand that. That's your argument that it's a mistake. But there are lots of things that, if done mistakenly, you have to wait till the district judge has decided the case, and then you appeal at the end. The rationale for allowing a person to appeal immediately from a denial of leave to intervene as of right is that that's what makes him a party. So there's no other way to appeal. You can't wait an appeal at the end because only parties can appeal at the end. But if IFS is a party, it can appeal at the end.
Your Honor, with deference...
If the district judge made a mistake.
Your Honor, with deference, I don't believe that that's true. Under contested matters, there's actually only one way in which a party can intervene as of right. It does so as an interested party. Permissive intervention, which is what I think that you're referring to, is dealt with in the bankruptcy rules for contested matters under 2018. Just because one is a party in a bankruptcy case doesn't give one the right to participate in every single proceeding. And so what the effect of our not being able to participate in this proceeding is that when the hearing takes place, that we have no opportunity to participate in discovery, and perhaps most significantly, that when the hearing takes place, we have no opportunity.
So far as I'm concerned, you're just confusing your claim on the merits with your claim on appellate jurisdiction. If you are right on the merits, then the district judge is not allowing you to participate in the hearing is a mistake. That is, it's an error. And when the bankruptcy judge, when Judge Weedoff enters a decision, you'll be able to appeal because you are a party, and therefore, that's one of the reasons why, if you're excluded from this proceeding, it's a mistake. But you can't leap from the claim that if you're not allowed to stand up and give an oral argument in the bankruptcy court 2 days from now, it's a mistake. One doesn't leap from that to it's appealable now. It just means that you would have a ground to appeal from the decision the bankruptcy judge makes.
Your Honor, with deference, I would say that the cases have held that that an interested party in bankruptcy is the equivalent of intervention.
Are you saying that, therefore, you couldn't appeal from whatever order he makes?
That's exactly right, Your Honor.
Does it say so somewhere in a rule or case?
Is there some rule or case that says that somebody who is actually a party to the bankruptcy and an interested party who is excluded by mistake cannot appeal from the decision?
Your Honor, we do not. I do not believe that we have a case specifically on 1113.
You know, I looked for that. I couldn't find any such case.
That's right, Your Honor. And there are not many cases. There's no cases holding the other way either.
And of course, United says you can appeal at the end. And if we say you can appeal at the end, then there you are.
Your Honor, an appeal at the end, I would suggest it would not be of particular use
well,
to
a lot of people. Say that. They say, look, we'd rather appeal from this discovery order now than it, 2 years later when we'd all have to redo it. But if we adopted that position, there would be no end to exceptions to the final decision rule. Things are bad enough in bankruptcy as it is with all sorts of interlocutory appeals. But the contention you're now making would, it seems to me, just open the floodgates. There would be no end to appeals in bankruptcy.
Your Honor, actually, I don't believe that to be the case, with due respect. 1113, the level of participation, who can participate in 1113D, is someone who has actually a financial stake in the proceeding. This proceeding focuses on the rejection of collective bargaining agreement.
I understand that, but that's just back to your proposition that if the bankruptcy judge doesn't hear your arguments on Wednesday, that will be a mistake. It doesn't mean, and you won't be able to appeal from the final decision on the ground that that's an error.
Well, Your Honor, the concern that we have on law is that the case law that's available, and United has cited nothing to the contrary, indicates quite clearly that being an interested party is the same as being a party that can intervene as of right. And then we face...
You can't intervene as of right in a case in which you're already a party.
Your Honor, but in this... a bankruptcy proceeding is a series of proceedings. We cannot intervene in a... we cannot participate in every single one of the proceedings. For example, if this were an adversary proceeding, then we would have the straightforward...
If this were an adversary proceeding, then your argument would be straightforward, but it's not.
The argument, however, that I think
is... But what is it that keeps you out of the proceeding, of this proceeding?
The order of Judge Weedoff.
But, I mean, is there a rule or something that says you can't...
No.
Essentially, or is it an ad hoc decision that you make?
We believe it's an ad hoc. There's a rule, 1113D, that says that if you are an interested party, you have a right to participate in the proceeding. You have a right to participate in the 1113C proceeding. And so we sought to...
That's not the same thing as saying that a right to participate is not the same thing as a procedure by which someone enters a proceeding, right?
Your Honor, that is the procedure by which someone enters a proceeding. Essentially, we attempted to participate in the proceeding. United Airlines took the position that we were not an interested party, and Judge Weedoff decided that we are not an interested party and therefore that we did not have a right to participate under 1113D. That the courts have found.
So is there any other basis on which you could take an interlocutory appeal? I mean, do you have some... You said that your an appeal right at the end of the case wouldn't be worth much. Well, that suggests the possibility of some other ground for taking an appeal.
Well, I suppose another ground for taking the appeal, Your Honor, is that a district court can always take an appeal as a matter of discretion. Judge Dara, in this case, clearly didn't reach the question of whether he should reach it as a matter of discretion because he found that there was a final order that he could rule on. But clearly the fact that he led to that conclusion suggests that he would have taken an appeal as a matter of discretion. Had he taken the appeal as a matter of discretion, the standard here for reversing that decision would be abuse of discretion. And since Judge Dara at least certainly exercises discretion to take the appeal, we would argue, Your Honor, as a practical matter, that he has dismissal of the appeal, and this court is properly has jurisdiction to decide the appeal unless it finds that there was abuse of discretion in taking the appeal in the first place.
On the issue of whether United should be able to repudiate the collective bargaining agreement, what arguments would you advance that would be any different than the arguments that the union will advance?
In terms of the factual arguments that we would make, Your Honor, the union has separate interests than we do. And I think actually there's Second Circuit case law that a union cannot represent a pension plan
But just as a practical matter, what arguments are you going to make that would be different than what the union would be saying?
Your Honor,
the same objective.
Your Honor, the proceeding hasn't begun, so we don't know what arguments they would make, but certainly the arguments that we would make are that the company certainly can survive without rejecting the two plans of pension plans that are currently going to be heard on Wednesday. That is to say, we believe that now, having rejected two of the four pension plans, that the two remaining pension plans are something that the company can and should pay for as a factual matter,
You would want to oppose this on Wednesday. You would want to oppose the settlement.
No, Your Honor. The settlement relates to termination, not to the 11-13 proceeding. What we would want to oppose on Wednesday is a rejection of our contract rights under the collective bargaining agreement. And we've explained why it is that the contract rights are far more valuable than the statutory rights at issue in the termination proceedings.
Okay, well, thank you. Well, I'll give you more time later, Mr.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Seligman?
May it please the Court, David Seligman on behalf of Debtors United Airlines. Your Honors, I think that there are four reasons why the Bankruptcy Court and the District Court correctly ruled that the IFS is not a proper party in interest in this case. First of all, the 11th...
Are you going to say anything about the jurisdictional issue?
Well, Your Honor, I would agree with some of the statements raised earlier that I don't think this is akin to a motion to intervene as of right. Rather, we think that it's perfectly acceptable for the independent fiduciary to appeal. If there is going to be an 11-13 trial on Wednesday, they are certainly free to appeal the ruling in that case and rule the fact that they weren't and appeal the,
well,
the
they
fact
are,
they weren't.
They had an alternative argument that this is a collateral order appeal, that the issue of their right to intervene is different from the merits, and that the and essentially that they will suffer irreparable harm and eventual appeal would not save them, because court would say, well, if you'd been in the proceeding, how do we know what difference it would make? So.
Well, I think when you get into the collateral order doctrine, you're talking about discretion here, and I think it's important to look at who is the IFS trying to represent in this 11-13C proceeding, and who is already represented in this case, and who are they trying to assert rights on behalf of. The 11-13 proceeding is a proceeding to reject a collective bargaining agreement between United and its unions. The unions are all in there fighting the rejection, and they represent the employees. They represent the active employees. The retirees are not a party to the proceeding because they're retirees and no longer, represented by the unions as part of the collective bargaining process. And Judge Weedoff has already ruled that that one of the retiree groups who sought to intervene in the 11-13 process couldn't be a part of that, and that ruling was affirmed by Judge Dara. So the active employees are already championed by the unions. The retirees have no statutory right to participate in the 11-13 trial. They certainly do have the right to participate in the pension termination trial, as will the PBGC, not the IFS, because they've said that they have no right to participate in the pension termination trial, which will happen concomitantly with the 11-13 rejection. So there's no party.
Well, does IFS have any function?
IFS was retained last year, in September, October of last year, to investigate contribution issues of the plan and to bring claims on behalf of the plan for contribution claims. They have, in fact, brought that motion. It's currently set for trial in September. And Judge Weedoff has already issued a preliminary, not a preliminary ruling, a ruling on a threshold issue as to the priority entitled to minimum funding claims, which is the independent fiduciary's charge to seek to assert. And that is currently, that we believe that that is an interlocutory order. That's currently pending in front of Judge Dara on a motion for an interlocutory appeal. So there's nobody here that is not already represented in the proceeding who has rights to be represented in this proceeding. And everyone else who has no rights to be represented in this proceeding, the IFS doesn't need to stand in their shoes. And part of the absurdity of the IFS's position can be shown in one of the pension plans called the MAPC plan. In the MAPC plan, there are both union employees and non-union employees. And so because there's no collective bargaining obligation with respect to the non-union employees, we're not moving forward with an 1113 trial with respect to them. So the independent fiduciary would say, we need to champion the union the union mechanics who happen to be in this MAPC plan in the 1113 rejection trial, but the non-union employees, we don't need to represent them because that's not an 1113 issue. And when it comes to pension termination, they are not going to need to represent them because IFS already agreed that they have no rights to participate in the pension termination process.
Could you tell me, perhaps this is not strictly relevant to our legal determination, could you tell me why United is opposing their participation and, for that matter, this appeal? And if they're excluded, and if it later turns out that they were an interested party entitled to participate, you are holding open an uncertainty about this termination for a potentially extended period over a procedural issue at a time when I would have thought if United was serious about its bankruptcy, it wanted these things definitively resolved rather than having issues held open that may require you to go back and start from square one.
Your Honor, I completely understand your point, and here's the reason why. Throughout this whole case, there have been scores, if not hundreds of parties who have sought to intervene in various proceedings. And the case becomes paralyzed, as you had mentioned earlier, if parties continually try to be involved in the proceeding. If we look at the 1113 trial combined with the pension termination trial.
Do you suspect that Judge Weedoff will be unable to say to IFS, you're now making an argument that duplicates those of the flight attendants union, please sit down? I think Judge Weedoff will be unable to do that.
He could, of course, could be able to do that, but it's not just the issue of standing up at the podium and making an argument. There have been months and months of discovery by scores of parties here, people working around the clock to get that done, and Judge Weedoff...
They seem not to want to reopen any discovery. They seem to want to talk. And so far as I can tell from their presentation here, they don't have anything really to talk about. So you're holding open the prospect of upsetting everything that happens, maybe a year later, maybe 2 years later, for no reason that I can appreciate.
Well, Your Honor, we would certainly take the position that under the, I know this court doesn't like the phrase equitable mootness, but under the mootness doctrine, when we would get out, all those remaining pending appeals we would seek to dismiss.
There's no way in the world. You represented in your brief in this case that they would have a remedy on appeal should, you've asked us to dismiss, you've represented that they would have a remedy on appeal. Your representations are taken seriously. You're estopped to make any other argument at any later time. Don't think we'll allow you to talk out of both sides of your mouth.
Your Honor, the other point that I would say is in terms of closure here, and there is also a settlement hearing up for tomorrow where we have what we believe is resolved globally our issues with the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation. I know that's not an issue here today, but I just wanted to raise that, Your Honor, in that we are making Herculean efforts, I believe, to move this case out of bankruptcy. And if the settlement is approved tomorrow and the pension plans are all terminated by the PBGC, the PBGC will step in as statutory trustee and there's no more role for the independent fiduciary. So I just wanted to mention that. Stepping back, Your Honor, on the actual merits of the appeal, again, we believe that there's three principal reasons why they're not a party interest in this case. First of all, we're talking about the rejection of a collective bargaining agreement. A collective bargaining agreement is an obligation between United and between its unions. There's a collective bargaining agreement, and there's a separate pension plan document. They're not the same. They're not the same document. The independent fiduciary is not a party to the collective bargaining agreement. They're not signatory. The collective bargaining agreement does not incorporate by reference the entire pension plan and make them one document. They're simply not a party to that proceeding. The only thing that the independent fiduciary is hanging its hat on is language in the collective bargaining agreement which says United shall not reduce benefits to the under the pension plan without the union's consent. Reduction of benefits is a settlor issue, a plan design issue, which is something that the independent fiduciary has already disavowed their need to be participant in because it's not an issue related to contributions. And secondly, it's only an obligation not to reduce benefits without the union's consent, not the independent fiduciary's consent or not somebody else. So I think that that evidence is that these are not one contract where an independent fiduciary has any rights under it. They're two separate documents. The independent fiduciary cites a number of cases where pension funds have been able to assert claims against a plan sponsor for missed contributions. That's not at issue here. They are actually asserting claims against us for minimum funding contributions, and that's fine, and that'll be adjudicated in September. But those are different from being able to stand as a roadblock to the rejection of 1113 contract. The other point that I'd like to make is, again,
this roadblock business. I don't understand the roadblock business. Well, if you thought you had a settlement with all of the unions to abrogate the contract and IFS were trying to block the settlement, then their participation as a party might be relevant. But that doesn't seem to be what's going on.
Well, Your Honor, I'd like to speak
all
to...
All that seems to be what's going on is that they want to broadcast an argument that they hope Judge Weedoff will read, and they fear he hasn't read it so far, and it which is kind of a bizarre thing to have before us on appeal, but there we are.
Well, I would say, Your Honor, a perfect example of that is earlier this year, United reached an agreement with its pilots to modify their collective bargaining agreement to take out any potential obligation to maintain a pension plan. And we would submit that process basically allowed United to move on to the second step of pension termination. And that had the same effect as potentially rejecting a collective bargaining agreement in the 1113 trial. IFS, while they filed a statement of reservation of rights, they said that this is a contribution issue, not a contribution issue, we don't need to be involved in that. And I would submit that in that situation, if there's a consensual agreement between parties to remove any contractual prohibition to a collective bargaining agreement, then the same thing should apply here in terms of effect.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Seligman. Mr. Agusti?
Yes.
How much time does he have? Well, we don't have any, but we'll give you a couple of minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. First, I want to direct the Court's attention to the cases that we have cited for the direct proposition that an interested party as of right under 1113D is the same as intervention as of right. You will find those cases at the bottom of pages 3 and 4 of our brief. The second point that I'd like to make is the difficulty of our coming back on appeal. And I know you hear it all the time in different contexts, but quite specifically in this context, the difficulty that we're faced with is the following. Under bankruptcy law, to the extent that there's a confirmed plan and we wish to appeal a confirmed, and that plan is in order to prevent consummation of that plan, we have to put up an enormous bond, a bond which the pension plans here would never be able to afford. In the absence of that, there's a very strong case law that any appeal would be mooted. And so we fear that if we do not have our
opportunity... Certainly not in this circuit.
That's not the law in this circuit, Your Honor?
You're familiar with the proposition that we have disapproved the equitable mootness doctrine? It's not the law in this circuit. Sorry.
Well, thank you very much, Your Honor. I would simply then I accept your statement of the
Look,
law is true.
What is your stake? I understood you say you wanted to take discovery. Do you want to do discovery?
We would very much like to do discovery, Your Honor.
Someone said no, but yeah. So you want to do discovery?
If we're afforded an opportunity.
And what is it that? Why can't the unions protect the interests here? What?
The unions have two interests, Your Honor. Essentially, they have their interests of their actives, and they have their interests of the retirees. The courts have found, and we're happy to direct the court's attention to those cases, that the labor unions are naturally inclined to favor the interest of actives over the interest of non-dues paying retirees. It's for that reason that we represent a separate interest than one represented by the unions. But if I might say, Your Honor, after answering your question, for intervention as of right, of course, the issue of whether another party represents the same interest is irrelevant as opposed to the situation in permissive intervention under Rule 2018. If there's no further
questions. So do you actually have a different position from the union?
Your Honor, I believe that we will have a different position from the union. Certainly, we have some common ground with the unions, but certainly the unions would be willing, for example, to settle this litigation on grounds that may not favor the retirees and may favor the actives more. It would be a natural.
Is it your position that you would be entitled to block the unions from settling the litigation by negotiating a new collective bargaining agreement?
No, Your Honor. It's our position.
Well,
that
so if the unions are happy with a deal that sells out the retirees, you have no legal complaint about it.
Your Honor,
if the unions, on the other hand, go to bat for the retirees, it sounds like your participation is surplus.
Your Honor, the way in which 1113 C works on the termination of collective bargaining agreements, that is why we are seeking an opportunity to participate in it. If we have an opportunity to participate in the process, then we will have an opportunity to participate in the settlement or non-settlement of litigation relating to the collective bargaining agreements, the specific obligations of which we have been found to be, and we have the cases in our brief as well, third-party beneficiaries of those contracts.
Okay, well, thank you very much
thank
to
you,
both parties. And the court will stand in recess until 9:30 tomorrow.